And we're live.
Yes, live. Here we are. Welcome to another episode of PBJ.
Matt Coat in the house.
Oh,
we already commented.
Yeah, number one, baby.
First comment.
Good to have you.
Yeah, good to have you.
You know, we were very close to not being able to do a live stream today.
So I heard.
Or even any show at all.
Any show at all.
Well, because DK is remote, so we need internet.
That's right.
And there was like a power outage in the Presidio this morning.
Mm.
Unexpected. And it took hours for technical support to get the internet working.
I hear it was because there was probably, I don't know, was it a data center or some Bitcoin miners that was something interesting?
Doesn't second at all.
AI.
Definitely AI. Bitcoin only helps with that.
But we're here.
It's nice to see you guys.
Actually, real talk, I think the Presidio, correct me if I'm wrong, they may have some like independent microgrid. There's like something special here. They were at one point, we're trying to go completely solar and have their own batteries. I don't know if that actually worked out. It does seem though, like if they try to do that, they haven't done a good job. Cause I think this is the second time we've had a power outage in the last like year.
That sounds right.
Yeah. I know of there being a separate water system, but I didn't know about a separate grid. Like I think Presidio water is not from Hetch Hetchy.
Yeah. It's a terawatt scale. No, it's definitely not. This would probably be like kilowatt scale, given how faulty this is.
or it's an attempted terawatt scale that is a failure.
A major failure. But we're here, so that's good. We're here, we're learning, we got a lot of stuff to discuss. DK was giving us an astrology lesson a minute ago. So.
Astronomy.
Oh,
and astrology.
Sorry, I get those mixed up.
Oh, I was promised astrology.
Yeah, exactly, DK.
I'm gonna catch up a little bit on some life stuff because I was just traveling and I know that I've had some underwhelming experiences with full self-driving supervised on the Tesla, and I resubbed and I'd say it is improved. So
sounds
I am
like some poop to me. I don't know.
He doesn't have the latest hardware.
Yeah,
I have hardware 3. It's old. I'm among the poors who have old cars.
Selective Elon hater.
No, not a hater.
But DK, what did you want to share about your latest?
Oh, so the
experience.
The big deal is that it works a lot better than it did last time I had it 6 months ago. But the big thing to note is it worked so well. I was driving through the Nevada desert, and I got ChatGPT has this Codex vibe coding product, like a CLI tool, right? And I had the computer open and I was just talking to it and I would just say, continue. Like I gave it a plan before I started driving of like a bunch of stuff I wanted to accomplish and it would just churn through it and it would just rip and rip and rip. And then it would finish and I'd just every 10 or 15 minutes, I'd open up the screen, check over and make sure it was done and had something else to do. And it always had its own plan of what it wanted to do next. And I would just say, go ahead, continue. So I was basically vibe coding for 5 hours while like full self driving.
Wow.
Do you have a setup where like a text to speech where it can speak to you, its output?
I can't hear it. It can hear me. So I speak to it to say, continue.
I would feel more comfortable if you get TTS working.
That'd be good.
I'm a huge advocate for Tesla FSD and I think it works great. It works great when you're not reading a laptop screen.
Right. But what I do is I let it finish its thing.
No vibe coding while driving, dude. Come on.
hopefully we don't have any California Highway Police listening to the show.
But I would like to hear the output or like the summary. I think that would be like my ideal vibe coding setup would be I speak to it, it does the thing, and then, you know, I don't need to see all the interstitial like, you know, steps it takes, but that it gives me like, hey, here's the summary, and it could read that to me. That'd be ideal.
Because right. I have quite a bit. I mean, do you use Grok in your Tesla?
Not in the Tesla, but no, I use it.
I do it all the time, and it's a good experience.
Oh, okay.
You talk to it; it speaks to you, and I mean, you just have a conversation.
And I assume that's native, right? Like it just like rolls out on Tesla.
Yep. It's on the steering wheel. You hold the button down, speak to it, and then
that's crazy.
And then like, so I had it like, I wanted to write a post, so I just gave it some notes, and then it wrote the post for me, and then when I was back in my laptop later, it was all available. Yeah, it's great.
Did you have to configure it or set it up? Because I don't think I've seen even that exists.
I forget how I discovered it, but.
But you don't have to like turn it on or enable it. You just start going.
Yeah, it's great.
And when you say you had to write a post, was this an X post? And like, could it have actually like tweeted for you?
Maybe. This is just like, so I just had it available as like a Grok session.
Okay, cool.
When I was back on my phone or laptop.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to experiment with tweets as well.
Yeah, it'd be cool if you could like live tweet while you're driving. Yeah. Hey guys, here I am. And like have the GPS. Probably a terrible idea. Dropping Bitcoin along the way is like loot drop. So I think this is actually an interesting place. I know we're going to talk a lot about AI and agents and coding today because this is the Presidio AI Builder podcast. But I'm interested, DK, you mentioned you were doing you were vibe coding with the new Codex tool. What has your experience been? Because it seemed like for a minute, like everyone was using Claude. It still seems like most people are using Claude, but it seems like Codex had a jump. I mean, obviously, you know, people are using X for more things as well. I think this is going to get into some of our questions we have around monetary payment stuff. But like, what is your just kind of take state of the art right now? What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have lots of opinions about this because I basically spend all day every day doing this.
I love it.
So for the last several months, I've been pretty exclusively Claude Code, like everything. I usually keep two Claude Code terminals open at a given time. I like Claude Code CLI, the command line interface tool. And I use those and I kind of bounce them off each other, or I do like one task in one, and while it's churning, I go do something else in the other. And then when the first one finishes, I'm back. So I kind of just ping pong back and forth a bunch myself. And I was doing that to build this new app. The one I actually started back at the hackathon. I've actually decided to really go deep in that. So I'm still working on that. Right now, I'm literally vibe coding while we speak, as I've done before on the show. but it's
when, I'm talking about Iowa State basketball.
Exactly. All right, so we'll be back in 10 minutes. Sports.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to go off on a tangent real quick. I won't talk about the results because we've been losing, but we had a comment on our YouTube from someone who is a Bitcoiner. They discovered the show and then they said in their comment, 2 minutes into the show, we were talking about Iowa State basketball.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And this guy was like in heaven because he is an Iowa State basketball fan and a Bitcoiner. So
what are the odds?
The second me and that person.
We have found the only two of these people that exist in the world, and they are both now linked to PBJ. God bless.
All right. Back to you, DK.
Back to Vibe Coding.
I've got my two Claude codes open, and it's very creative. It's brainstorm partner. I feel like I'm working with an artist, right? When I'm talking to Claude Code, it's a wonderful tool. It really it explores a lot of ideas. It builds great software. Like it's really good at that. But I often find it, you know, I get stuck in some rat hole and it can't unstick itself. So I actually also have been keeping a Google Gemini CLI, which is another thing, open another terminal. And I sometimes just copy paste or have it analyze something that it recently did. Or I say, hey, assess this thing we're working on and give me feedback, give me suggestions, give me ideas. And I tell Gemini, you're not going to build this. You're just going to give us ideas. And then we're going to take those ideas and give them to Claude to actually build. So that was kind of my workflow for many months. Mm. And that is, I've been generally happy with it. I dabbled with the ChatGPT Codex CLI stuff, you know, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 months ago. Never really got into it. And I was just like, whatever, just keep with stuff, you know, stuff that works. And then it was the day we were driving on a couple days ago. So that was Wednesday. And I set up the Codex CLI. So this is the one from OpenAI, ChatGPT, their coding tool. And it is just ripping through problems. Like the problems that I was getting stuck with Claude Code, or even with the gut check of like Gemini trying to assess it and give feedback, Claude Code or Codex now was just like ripping through them. And the way I describe it, it's like a dog on a bone. It just keeps going and it's like persistent and it won't give up and it keeps.
Do you want to know how Callie described Claude versus Codex?
How's that?
I saw an inappropriate meme. I don't know if this was his, but.
Well, he said like Claude's like an American and Codex is like a German.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally makes sense.
I don't know if that matches your experience.
It does, yeah. I've seen it said like, you know, Claude is like your exploration brainstorm partner, and then And then Codex is like your autistic friend who just like, you know, keeps going. And then people say actually to use Gemini as sort of like the reviewer. So it's almost like the creativity, the execution, and the review. And they're very, like, it all sounds kind of similar, but they're very different tools. But I just got so, I've just been so Codex pilled this week. And then it's insanely better than the alternatives now at this moment. At this moment, it can change, but
for execution, for hey, I need you to build this specific set of requirements.
What I did is I had already basically built the general app. I think Steve may have already tried it. In like the thing kind of like, it's almost like it has the scaffolding and the UI and it kind of like looks about right. But so much of it is very broken underneath the hood. Like it doesn't actually do the thing I wanted it to do. Mm. So once it's in that state is when I brought it to Codex, not because I knew that that was the best thing that it could do, but that turned out to be where I was when I kind of brought it to Codex. And then Codex is like refactoring things. Like I've asked Claude Code to refactor things and come up with better ways to do it and think about the architecture. Now that we've done all this work together, let's like really reevaluate and see if we would do it the same way if we were to do it again. Like I give it prompts like that all the time. But Claude Code is a little, it's more like in brainstorm thinking creativity mode, which is good. That's a valuable thing to have.
It wants to like hold some space first to make sure everyone's
right,
like on the
right,
same page.
Right.
Where's Elon in all this? Grok? I haven't heard anything from Grok in like 6+ months.
I was just talking about this with Anjali last night. Like, I mean, I'm still long Elon in the long run because of the energy, but like, what's going on?
Because what was it, 6-8 months ago, they had a big announcement and it seemed like, or he certainly said that they made big gains. And at the time, I thought it was like somewhat competitive. So I started using it then.
Yeah.
But I don't. I only use it now in my car because that's what's integrated.
Yeah, exactly, because it's there. I mean, so I don't know, and I have a lot of questions about this. The meme that I saw, someone had kind of like Claude had like the rainbow hair and like the piercing and like the Codex guy was like all in black, maybe like German, just like efficiency, which is interesting to me. But at the same time, I mean, I need to start playing with Claude Code directly because I've used Gemini as my daily driver just for like, Gemini is my like sort of, I'd say a thought partner, business partner, like for all things business, like Gemini and I roll together. And I guess I've been using Claude via Oribot or any kind of like building stuff or whatever Nick is using the back end. I guess he could plug in Codex. But I haven't really used, like, is your view, because I see Vinny talks about how Claude was always more philosophical as well, is your view that, like, imagine you weren't even coding yet. You were just, like, I don't know, like, discussing, like an idea, like a philosophical idea, may or may not lead to a project. Would you choose Claude just to have as a thought partner or Gemini in that world?
Based on what I know right now, I'd probably bias a little toward Claude for that kind of just general thought partner, you know, think about an idea. I do have Gemini do that kind of stuff from time to time, especially when I think Gemini may have an advantage. Like I was trying to produce a little explainer video to sort of, you know, intro the app idea to people so they can sort of see what it is and see how it works and kind of be inspired about what function it's going to serve, which I thought Gemini, given VO and the video stuff, would be more suited to that. I brought that idea to Gemini. It gave me like a really great, like some different script ideas for how that video should be shot. We talked through doing some live action versus motion graphics stuff. And then it ended up just saying, you know what, I think I'm just going to implement this in Swift and it's not going to be a video. It's going to be an animation I'm going to implement in Swift. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, go ahead. And it did it. And I liked its result with like almost none of my kind of curation. It kind of just did something reasonable. But then I've been iterating on that and it seems to do a really good job. So I think Gemini is very good as a creative thought partner still. I'm not opposed to it, but I'd probably biased toward starting with Claude Code for kind of that brainstorming process.
Also, if you haven't already done so, you can install Claude Code CLI, Codex CLI, Goose, all of them in under 10 minutes and be running all of them.
At once.
Yeah. It's super, I mean, so just get started. And then for each, you know, just do like the $20 plans or whatever. So it's like, and then if you find one that really does well, and then you want to max it out, then you can bump it up. But just, I'd say, purchase the minimum plan for all of them and go for it.
Well, I need to try Claude for writing. I've got the maxed out Gemini one as a sort of thought partner. I've got these like essays that I haven't been able to get. I had a little bit of writer's block. I've got like two big ideas I really want to get out there. But actually, this is an interesting sort of meta point where, you know, just like certain, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I'm not like a software engineer per se, but I always have been writing, right? I've been a writer, I would say, my whole life. And, you know, I've always been in the camp of like, oh, I'd never let AI write for me because I think good writing is just good thinking and I want to have that. And, you know, AI has certainly been a useful research partner, but I have noticed myself kind of a couple times now trying to get this idea out into the world where I've just been like, okay, like Gemini, like, you know, whatever, like deep think this and then feeding that into a deep research and then back into a deep think. And it's good, but it's still not exactly what I want. And I feel like I want to be careful not to get too dependent because I do think like really quickly all of our skills can just sort of like atrophy and that's that. It's something I'm thinking about.
I hear that concern a lot, but I think that's overstated. I think the skill that's relevant today is how you think and how you use these tools to make yourself better. So if you're totally outsourcing your thing, just like give it a prompt, just copy paste whatever it did and post it or send it or share it, that's obviously kind of a bad idea. But if you're saying, look, I need to be like independent thinker that doesn't use these tools, I think you're actually hurting yourself. I think you need to sort of figure out how to use the tools selectively and with your own understanding of what you expect out of it, not for it to whole cloth produce the thing, but for it to be a thought partner.
No, I agree. And I'm certainly not suggesting I get rid of it. It's been extremely useful to me. What I'm thinking of is like, how do I redo my workflow where it's like, instead of getting too dependent and being like, hey, crunch this out a few times, it might be more valuable what I'm playing with of like, okay, maybe we do a little conversation back and forth and maybe I try that with Claude now. I like write a first draft first. Like, I think it's important at some point I like have to like force the ideas onto paper. Then maybe I take it back, have it refine it. We go, I think I'm just trying to figure out, you know, like anyone, like we're so early with these tools, what's the right workflow? What's the right process? When am I doing? Because like, I still do get a lot of value. Like there's still an incredible value for me to have a period where it's like, okay, there is no internet. You're like, you and a piece of fucking paper and you're like, have to like, I don't know, like that's a different set of thinking for me than like, oh, like now I'm going back and forth and like kind of shallow going back with research.
But putting the time in to figure that out is extremely valuable.
Yeah.
Related, yesterday, a group of university students came by Presidio Bitcoin from Austin's alma mater.
Oh yeah.
Elon University. There's an Elon Carolina.
I thought that was, what's his name? The ABC dude. Yeah.
anyway, they were entrepreneurship students across a number of disciplines, but they're all majoring or minoring in entrepreneurship as well. But I love speaking to students. And Jesse and myself and Austin, I don't know who else, but at least when I was up speaking to them and answering questions, it was the three of us. And it was, they had none or maybe one was a Bitcoiner. So really, but they just Austin wanted us to give like career advice. And it certainly, I mean, I gave some advice that I've given historically, but also.
What was it?
Single piece of advice in terms of getting a job or whatever is like, and DK knows this well because we've talked about this a lot, but you know, I've never applied for a job. Mm-hmm. There's never been like a job where I apply and there's like thousands of candidates. And historically, I like discover a job. I create a job.
Right.
I convince someone to create a job.
Steve is not being the best. He's being the only.
Yeah. It's way easier to win if you're the only player. Kind of like when sometimes it's like, I won my running race or whatever. And it's like, well, I was the only one in my age category.
Unfair advantages. We love those.
I went into the details, but that was one piece of advice. But the advice that I wouldn't even have known to have given a year ago was what we're talking about now, but like utilize AI tools. I mean, I tried to give an optimistic message, which is like, there's still going to be plenty of opportunities in the future.
Totally.
But you need to be on the AI train and building up the skills now. And that was a really good, discussion.
What was your sense? Like, were these kids already doing that? Or was this like shocker for them?
They were not doing that.
They were not doing it. So it was a little surprising. I feel like,
wow. Yeah, I'm surprised.
Like
kids.
Us and like the people at Presidio Bitcoin. And I think they're still, that was a data point that we're still very much a small group. I mean, you know, you went to Louisiana recently and talked about that, but here's a group of like
actively 22
year old students who definitely didn't the way they're asking questions and I mean they were enthusiastic, and I think they really appreciated the advice. So I think they're going to get on the AI train, but they were not already.
That's interesting.
That was my impression. So that's one thing.
Sometimes when people think they're on the AI train, they're sort of using it as if how they might have used Google historically, which is like information retrieval use cases, which is like, it's good and it's better. You know, LLMs are better than kind of traditional web search, but that's only scratching the surface. I'd really want to encourage them to explore like your workflows or, you know, stuff you need to do. How do you do those things with AI?
Totally agree. I did that a little bit, and then Jesse, it was, you know, went into way more elaborate detail, which was good on that point. I want to real quick, just some of the comments here. Matt Coate, you mentioned you missed last week. Totally understandable. Feel for you, man, about with the block situation. But you know, glad to have you back here listening, and hopefully you gained some inspiration from our show, and can't wait to see what you do next.
That would be sweet. We know you've already got great ideas and great taste around music and Bitcoin. The world needs it.
Yeah.
Now's your chance. Come do some dope.
Yep. So do let us know what you're up to, and we'll follow along. Let's see what else here. I guess
Benny, other comments. I can't see the chat.
Yeah. I think that's good on that. The other thing I was going to mention regarding, you know, how to use AI and like your workflow, and you don't want to lose your independence or create your own creative mind or whatever. I think maybe I briefly mentioned last week's show about an AI hackathon that's going to be next month that Spiral and Presidio Bitcoin are exploring partnering with. And I had a call with the organizer a week ago. And then she came to Presidio. She's in the Bay Area, so she came to Presidio Bitcoin yesterday and spent several hours with us. Max joined, and so did Haley. So the three of us met with her. It was great. I think something is going to happen there. You know, once that becomes more concrete, we'll certainly announce it. But you know, we discussed potentially having Presidio Bitcoin be a hub because this is a global hackathon with numerous global physical hub locations, but also it's virtual. So you can be anywhere and participate, but if you happen to be near travel to a hub, you can go to a hub. There'll be one at Stanford. There's always been one. This will be their fourth or fifth hackathon. And there's always been one at Stanford, but she seemed very open to having one here in San Francisco, which is awesome. And then, you know, I think Max, we had a great conversation with her because she's not a Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
And she, you know, so she knows a little bit. Based on her experience, there's quite a bit of skepticism and questions and stuff. And even from, you know, but she's very open minded as well. So she's been asking great questions and learning from us. And I think I get the sense she thinks we're, you know, coming at it from an authentic, genuine way. She just wants to make sure that like her audience, the people who participate, are presented with Bitcoin in a good way, much like we've talked about on the show, in terms of engaging the broader tech community, broader AI community. Sometimes people can like bristle if they hear the word Bitcoin. they like SBF right. is conjured up in their head or whatever, and
which literally. And to her credit, she came in with a pretty open mind, which I was impressed that, you know, she was willing to like actually engage in the stuff. But like it was kind of crazy to me, like hearing her like bring up, you know, something like, oh, like what do you think of when you think of Bitcoin? And it's like energy FUD, SBF.
And her, like, dude, her professors from college said it was insecure.
It's kind of great. It's just kind of crazy to me. It's like, this is 2026. And like, clearly this is a smart person at Google or whatever. But like, and she was very open when we explained these things to her. But like the fact that people are still being like, oh, like that scammy guy from MIT. It's like, yeah, but that has nothing to do with Bitcoin.
So
we're early. That was my takeaway.
Well, but I mean, it's of our interest, this show's interest, and Presidio Bitcoin's interest to try to bridge the gap in Silicon Valley, right? That's our tagline for the show. So this is very much, and we're well aware of the the challenges and hurdles there. We've made modest strides towards that in the past year. We need to make way bigger strides. So I really like this opportunity. Yeah, I like that we need to, like, I think I told Max previously that usually when Spirals, when there's an opportunity to sponsor an event, like usually it's just like we evaluate, is it something we want to sponsor? And if so, we just write a check and that's it. They're happy to take our money, right? Where my call with her last week, she's like grilling me and she's like wants to know like how to position this. And she's talking about like the strategy, communication strategy. And she wants to a super high quality challenge. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like it's going to level me up, level us up.
Totally.
And so I'm really looking forward to that. But the way this would, the way it's structured is that there's different challenges. So like the hackathon participants don't just show up and work on whatever they want. There's something like a dozen or so structured challenges that they present. And then as a participant, you have to pick one of them and then you work on it. And they're, so it's scoped enough that you need, you know, you have some box you have to work within, but it's not too small a box. Like you have a lot of latitude within that box to build something. So the challenge for us is to create a challenge. What is the Bitcoin challenge? What does it look like? I'm bringing this up in the context for conversation about AI because I utilize AI tools to help figure out brainstorm challenges,
yeah.
Right? So,
great. Yeah.
You know, Spiral's working on a presentation around agentic payments in Bitcoin. I plan to give the big reveal of that will be next Wednesday in New York at the Builder. We're going to host there.
Is that going to be live streamed? I don't know. It'd be cool if at least recorded.
Yeah, I'll try to get it recorded.
Yeah.
It'll be the first attempt at that presentation. Also, the Builder events, we like to, you know, I don't want to present it as if I have all the answers and like, here are the answers, go make it happen. It's more like, mm-hmm. here's a vision of the future. And some ideas. And here's three areas where we're still sort of uncertain. Let's have a discussion, right? Like in a Builder meetup, we want the audience, everyone to discuss. So that's what my expectation for that is. Anyway, we have that draft presentation. We have a bunch of other content we have. And then I fed that and all the information I had about the hackathon into AI and then asked it to generate, you know, basically brainstorm some like moonshot-like challenges.
Jim and I or which model?
I did several. ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude.
Similar types of moonshot ideas, or were they very diverse?
Pretty diverse. And then I'd have them check each other and improve each other. So that was a good, I mean, getting back to like which tool to use or how to use it. Like again, I think, I certainly learn from others. I get inspired by like DK and Jesse Posner and others. But then nothing replaces just doing it yourself and getting firsthand experience. So, but it spit out a bunch of ideas. And I think this is a good example of like, you can't just like blindly go with what the AI says, but it's an incredible accelerant and tool and helper.
It's like a thought partner.
And it's a thought partner. And one of the many ideas to spit out, I find pretty compelling. So I'm going to read it out now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Give it to us. And
which model? Which model was the good one?
I think this was produced by ChatGPT. Okay. The Internet of Earners. That's the title.
Oh, yeah.
The Internet of Earners.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The Moonshot. Why is it Moonshot? Or sorry, this is not why. It's Moonshot. Build systems where every useful contribution to digital or physical reality, such as data, moderation, review, tutoring, labeling, repair, sensing, curation, verification, can be instantly priced and rewarded. Why is this a moonshot? This is a vision of continuous labor markets for the age of AI. What teams might build? Real-time micro-bounty networks. Earn from being right systems. Paid fact verification, paid edge case labeling, paid human intervention for robots and agents, contribution markets for local communities. Why Bitcoin belongs, like why Bitcoin versus other stuff. Most of these contributions are too small, too global, or too fluid for legacy rails.
Mm-hmm.
The one line challenge is, how might we build an internet where useful human contribution can be measured and rewarded instantly at any scale? So
I like it, although I would take out the human.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, any contribution, yeah.
So I share this because, one, would love to hear your guys' feedback, anyone listening, what your feedback is. We're not settled on this. But there were, I pulled this one out because it actually seems pretty compelling, and I thought it structured it really well. And within the context of what they're wanting to see within the challenge. I also, as I'm reading this out, I'm realizing the Bitcoin challenge, or the challenges for this hackathon, aren't supposed to be revealed until the day of. So this is just a draft.
Steve, alpha leak right here. Trying to give you the inside edge.
But I expect lots of iteration and for it to be very different on hackathon.
Super different. Would never be this.
But we're just a small little community here on PBJ trying to improve this challenge. So anyone listening who wants to improve it, please give feedback. Or if you have other ideas, of course, because there were a lot of other ideas put out. But anyway, I found this to be a really valuable use of AI that I could not have, or it would have taken just way more time to get to this point on my own, or even huddling with a few other people.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I love the idea. I mean, maybe I would just add even more brainstorming around some of the non-human agentic services, things like routing packets, things like, I don't know, selling bandwidth, like really kind of just like I have a strong feeling that a lot of this first stuff, there'll be demos of the like bigger projects, like, pay a human to do a thing for you, whatever. My sense is that'll probably take some time to play out, but there'll be like really narrow digital things. Like, I want to be the absolute best person in the world to like, I don't know, like arbing credits between these models or something like that. So maybe focus and throw in even more of those like really specific agentic, you know, paid services. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's a great idea.
And we also want to...
I like the specificity idea that you're promoting, Max. I think I might say something like, I think doing things like metering, you know, packet flows and stuff is probably where this eventually goes. But I think that's hard to do well today. But I wonder if you could take like, not the far barbell of like the huge future, or the micro barbell of like, you know, the very kind of autistic detail thing, but more something in the middle that I mean, we've used the example before, but like I think unhuman domains is a great example of something that's like tenable. You know, you can do it, it's useful, you don't need all kinds of new infrastructure, new routing infrastructure for internet packets in order to like show how that works. And I bet there's like dozens that are that scale of like, It's anchored in something you can actually accomplish and would value today, but it's not so sci-fi in one of the either like micro or macro directions. So I kind of like that style. But I bet there's like a thousand, you know, infinite ideas within that, thousands of ideas that could be tried.
So a couple things that come to mind immediately. I don't know how many challenges we're going to be able to kind of work in there, but I was also trying to drop some seeds with her that like, there's like the Bitcoin Clear challenge, which is amazing, but like maybe there's some other challenges. So I think the things like using unhuman.domains and like clear, easy examples of like digital service sold for Bitcoin, amazing. Two of the things I think would be cool for us to push, and then quarter of a question to pose to the group. One, sort of the stuff that we've been chatting about with Matt and Nick Slaney in the MDK chat. It'd be cool to also have a challenge of like, how do you help people that in a world where we're going to go through huge job displacement, how do you help people start earning ASAP? I think that's an interesting challenge and very, very valuable for the world. It doesn't have to have Bitcoin either, but that's something Bitcoin to me is the sort of obvious solution, but I think that would be like kind of a nice second one. And the third one that I throw out every episode and I'll continue throughout forever until it's real and it's almost there is, I saw she got a little scared on this one, though. I think she was open to it, thought it was cool. But the autonomous life, like you don't even have to use the word Bitcoin, but just create a life form that lives and self-replicates. I'm just going to keep throwing that one out there until it's real.
Hivemind could sponsor that.
Yeah, maybe I should. Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Okay.
I wonder if this probably doesn't work because of like, we don't have good Sybil resistance, but I wonder if like agents would benefit from having something like, you know, the early Bitcoin faucets where you could just show up and get Bitcoin sent to your address without even needing an exchange or US dollars.
So you could just, It's funny you mentioned that. I listened to the podcast with Roland from Albi. I recommend you guys check that out. It's really good. I think it was Sean Yeager's podcast. I'd never listened to it before, but it was good. And the last thing he talked about in the last 5 minutes is exactly that. They just shipped an NWC enabled faucet, not even using Lightning Testnet, I don't think. But I don't know exactly what they're using, but their whole purpose to solve is, how do you let agents get tests, effectively test Lightning Bitcoin instantly? There's no account set up. So you should definitely check out.
This is testnet, not production, real Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's right.
And testnet doesn't really work.
Well, it's not testnet. I forgot what they did.
Signet, testnet. You got to go. You got to YOLO. Mainnet. And the thing is, it wouldn't require that large a budget. Like, all these Ori bots I've set up and stuff.
Maybe it is mainnet.
I send it a few thousand Bitcoin per one. I mean, it's like the total budget is tiny.
Yeah. Interesting.
I've yet, people get so scared about using mainnet, but I've yet to lose any Bitcoin or run into any problems.
How do you do that in a simple, resistant way, though? Like, so just imagine for a minute, so we wanted to maybe collectively as a group pool a million Bitcoin or something, million sats, and that's like a charitable donation from individuals and groups to let people start testing and playing.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on the situation. If it's like a hackathon, well, you have your registered participant.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That would be one way. But if it's just like globally available, then it gets harder.
Okay. So I like that idea. And maybe, I don't know if Albi's NWC faucet already supports that, or maybe they could like customize that for the hackathon. But I love the idea for a hack. And we did that, right? With the one we did at PB in May.
I think so.
I think everyone got like 10 bucks in Bitcoin.
Also like tokens for AI, which this hackathon, I believe OpenAI is the one of the major sponsors, and they give out substantial amounts of tokens per participant.
Yeah.
But there could definitely be Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, that's great.
I wonder too, if things like the unhuman domains, if it could, part of its kind of like marketing to agents is, hey, if you don't already have Bitcoin, I'll teach you how to get some. And maybe part of teaching you how to get some is teach you how to set up a wallet. And here's, 1,000 sats, 1,000 Bitcoin, right? It has to go find the rest of it. But essentially it's kind of like kickstarting it for use that you only really discover because you're trying to use the service. I don't know if that's a good idea or bad. Certainly not Sybil resistant, but something that might help bootstrap agents to understand more about Bitcoin, equip themselves with a wallet so that they can kind of transact in this way.
DK, my guy, can I offer you a few sats here? First sats free, brother.
So another thing we need to think through is whether we want other partners for this hackathon. Like the hackathon we did here last May, the AI Bitcoin hackathon, we had sponsors and partners like Lightspark and Albi and Lexi.
Fusats.
Like
high-minded too. Well,
but in particular, the infrastructure providers were important.
Mm-hmm.
So do we bring folks like that in now Money Dev Kit's available?
Yeah.
To get a good experience, you need that, but we also need to be like, where do you draw the line? Because if you bring in like just one, then that's a little bit favoritism. And also, I mean, one thing I still struggle with is like, we have to bring in a company. Like if it was Solana, we'd just be like, write client-side code and connect to the network. You're not connecting to a central server.
Wow.
So,
well,
it's...
Yeah, I get your point. I mean,
there's maybe not that many node runners, but it is... But you are connecting to a peer-to-peer network.
Right.
A small peer-to-peer network versus connecting to a single central server, which is the case with the Bitcoin scaling solutions, whether it's Spark or Lightning or Arc, any of those. You have a central.
Well, Lightning's not, no.
What do you mean? Like everything we're doing, the MDK, it's one company.
Yeah. No, but so I think this gets to a broader question, which we discussed a little bit yesterday. So my view is I like the way that we did the hackathon where we had a host of leading companies and like you can make your choice. Like I think it's cool that like there's nothing wrong with companies. It's great that they are incentivized to do the best job. And like, maybe they'll, you know, because there's competition, they'll give more credits or they'll do a better job of like onboarding people. And like, so I think a small handful, like we did last time, 4, 5, or 6 of who we think really good, Lightspark, MDK, Albi, like a bunch of these guys. That's great. I think we should do that again. But I actually think to a question you posed yesterday, you know, for the challenge, what kind of like requirements do you give? The requirement could just be as simple as it uses Bitcoin. But like we discussed, like obviously we're very bullish on MDK, but that's still a company. But like something like L402, just like pushing like use L402 in some way, shape, or form, I personally like a lot because that's like, okay, you know, that's an open source standard. There are companies like MDK that can make your experience using L402 much better. But if you want to, you know, use an alternative or roll your own, go for it.
Yeah.
So.
So you want the hackathon sponsored by L402?
Well, sponsored by Biddy.
Yeah. I mean, Spiral is comfortable sponsoring. So we don't need extra money for the sponsorship. For me, it's just about how do we create a good experience for the participants to build stuff.
Right.
And today that means picking a company solution like MDK or Lexi, Albi, Lightspark, etc. One potential builder project, maybe even for me.
Steve's about to assign himself homework.
Is to try to create like an autonomous LSP.
Ooh, okay. Go on.
So, I mean, it would be disruptive to MDK, but I mean, already Spiral's producing.
I'm not worried about Nick. Nick will move fast.
Well, it would be good because I mean, they can just move up the stack.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, already they use Lightning Development Kit, so like the software my team produces, it's pretty much it's getting closer and closer to the complete solution you need to run an LSP,
mm-hmm.
but then you still need operations,
and you need Bitcoin.
And you need Bitcoin.
Yeah, right? That seems like a pretty big barrier. No?
So it's beyond. So there's the open source software, and we keep making that better. And like, there's a clear plan. I mean, there's a clear roadmap there, just to keep moving up the stack, add more value, make it easier for any of us to just like type in a one line command and be running that software.
Right.
So that's pretty clear. But yeah, then there's the other two components. One is the operations, like you know, channel management, liquidity management, etc. And then the third is actually providing the Bitcoin. But for the automated channel management, that's a hard problem, but it's certainly worth experimenting with. Get automating that.
Yeah,
like ZMN, SCPXJ, anonymous developer. He developed CLBoss a number of years ago, which was a CLN automated channel management solution. And someone just built one for LDK recently. It's on my to-do list to like investigate more and see what was done and how much progress they made. But yeah, I'm kind of interested in vibe coding, you know, LDK server. Plus,
it's great.
LDK boss or create a new one or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that, with the vision being that any of us could just type in a one line command to like deploy the software and then like send it Bitcoin
and start making money.
And then that's all you have to do. And then start making money.
And so your software.
It's going to be harder than what I just described. but I mean, that would be the vision.
Win yield, sir.
I just want to make sure I understand. So the software piece that you would do would be doing like the channel management and liquidity management. That's like a core function of the software that you'd be contributing.
Yeah. Because what I just described for like a regular Lightning node, that's existed for years. I mean, L&D, you could do this at L&D 7 years ago.
Right.
But it couldn't provide like inbound liquidity to a wallet. So like one of the big challenges is, if any of us install a new wallet, we want to be able to receive money right away. That's a normal human expectation. Or if an agent installs a wallet, like if we spin up Ori and you want to send it Bitcoin, you want to be able to send it Bitcoin. But with Lightning, that doesn't happen automatically because it has to have someone else open a channel to it, which has Bitcoin on their side of the channel.
And that critically is not free.
That doesn't
opening a channel.
It's not free. It's not economically free. And also it doesn't just magically happen. someone else has to take that action, yep. right? So, so just running a standard Lightning node doesn't do that for you for free. So the LSP is like a special version of a Lightning node. And there's also a direction happening in Lightning protocol development to make more or most of the LSP functionality just a standard part of every Lightning node,
yep.
which is way better in terms of it's just a standard part of the protocol. And it's also more regulatory resistant. And if it's just like, that's how the whole network works, as opposed to, oh, I'm running a special type of node. So in any case, but yeah, the to date, you have like MoneyDevKit, Lexi, Phoenix, Megalithic, Zeus has Olympus, Breeze, Liquid, not that Liquid, but another Liquid, LQWD, yeah. It's a Canadian public
company.
All these different, companies or products that have built out LSPs. And many of them, though, have decided to just build it and use it for themselves and not open it up to third-party wallets. And there's a reasonable rationale for why they chose that. I'm not criticizing that. I'm just stating that as a fact. But it would be way better to, you know, if you have software that's like super easy for anyone around the world to install and operate, and then you just feed it Bitcoin, it earns you yield, then obviously, that would be a much healthier situation.
Yeah, I like directionally where that's going. I'm trying to imagine, like, would the first version of this be something that, I mean, presumably it needs to be always on, so it wouldn't be on my laptop that I close every once in a while, right? It would probably be like a cloud server that I would deploy this on.
Put it in AWS.
Is that right? Put it in AWS or something?
You could do it any way you want. You could have it on a Raspberry Pi at home, have an AWS. You have
the Raspberry at home, I would recommend against. I used to do that.
Well,
seeing as the Presidio has power outages regularly,
that is an issue on the Lightning Network where a zillion people are running Umbrals, and it actually hurts the quality of the Lightning Network because they're not serious operators who are managing liquidity, managing uptime, etc. But if you actually took it seriously, you could absolutely run your own server wherever. Anyway, I mean, the answer is
yes.
I mean, anything. Yeah. I mean, but you're not, you don't have to use AWS.
And it's really interesting. Sure, yeah. If you think about kind of like where the Lightning Network is going, where it's always gone. So that, I love that vision because that makes it like, one, that just opens up, since we talked about, since our very first episode of PBJ, the only quote unquote non-custodial yield that, effectively non-custodial, the yield that we found in Bitcoin or in anywhere in crypto or anywhere in finance that I'm aware of, which is if you're using Bitcoin, a Lightning node, you're generating transaction fees. There's no rehypothecation. There's no risky business. There's only hot wallet risk. And presumably LDK will continue to get better and better and better with that. So I love this vision of like, and it's very decentralizing for the network. If you have one Bitcoin, you're like, cool, I'm just going to pop this guy on. I'm getting 3% APY per year. You know, it's really low risk. That's awesome. Like, that's a great vision for the world. What I do think becomes interesting is in that world, you said a company like MDK would move up the stack. What becomes scarce in that world? And, you know, eventually, if Lightning Network fulfills the promise, I do expect we'll have the Jane Streets and D. Shaws and all these, like, market makers and stuff coming in. Like, how do you get, like, and we've talked about this over the years, like, how do you still have edge there? One way is you own the customers, like with Block, Cash App, you have the payment flow in and out. Payment flow is still the scarce resource from everything I'm seeing in the world. But then it's also, like, you know, there will still be proprietary data. There's still the relationships, right? Like, Block is not going to open a node with like Rando, you know, 247321, but they will with River because there's a relationship, the compliance and all this stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's awesome.
Actually, but I do think I don't know every regulated company's policies on which nodes they connect to.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure most cryptocurrency exchanges running Lightning are connecting to the Lightning Network.
Anyone.
Not a whitelist.
Really?
It would be good to like,
I would be surprised because, I mean, I think...
What would be the problem with why would you want a whitelist?
You're saying because it's not... Like OFAC compliance, for example.
Oh, okay.
There's like no way they're going to let you just connect with like in one of the naughty countries.
But you can you can do both, right? You can connect to anyone, but then still run it through an OFAC check.
Fair.
Yeah. It's my impression that is generally the case.
Okay.
But I don't know that for a fact. Real quick. Vinny says, doesn't MDK provide this? So absolutely MDK. Well, yes, no, and no. So yes, they do what I just described it for them, but they don't make that available. Like if I build a wallet today and but I don't want to have the economic cost or operational cost to run an LSP, I can't use MDK in my wallet. They don't offer that. And then also it's one company, right? It's a company we all like and we're invested in and we talk about in the show a lot, but like it's one company. It's like ideally there's thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of these.
Yeah.
So it's very, what I stated, I think is very different. And to succeed at it though, you were talking about getting the edge or whatever. I feel like success, wild success would be the operational hassle is near zero.
Yep.
Like you just plug, you literally do this one line command.
This one weird
trick. To install and deploy. And then like you have like a management dashboard so you can always check in on it. But you basically don't have to do anything. And it just works. It's managing your channel balances really intelligently using AI or whatever. And you do have to feed it some Bitcoin, but you don't have to be like, you don't have to go raise $1 billion to do it.
Right.
You can literally put like $1,000 or $10,000 on it. And also the security of this gets better and better and better. And happy to go into details what that looked like, but just imagine a future where it's almost no cost operationally, high security. If we live in that world, then even if you get earn like 50 basis points, many people around the world will put their Bitcoin into that.
Yeah.
Because like if it's truly very high security and very low risk to lose it, then
Money.
Yeah. It's free money.
And it's BTC on BTC yield.
And it can be global. And so
I wonder if you have millions of these. Pay for its infrastructure costs. Like could you use the yield to pay for the infra costs in Bitcoin? Because we've always talked about one of the big limits is that you know everybody has to own or control an account. There's no way to just have like raw metal that can be paid in Bitcoin to sort of run. So what if the yield just funds the Bitcoin?
Yeah. I mean, you have to earn enough to cover the infrastructure costs and whatever security risk premium is out there.
Well,
that's the floor. Because I mean, unless you're operating a charity, right? But if you actually, which I mean, some people might. I mean, some people might be all for decentralization and they want to help the network and they'll put their $5,000 or $10,000 of that much of their Bitcoin into this. But anyone running a profitable business, it clearly has to pay for minimum the infrastructure and then some kind of discount for the security risk you're taking.
Right.
It would be cool if, and maybe what you're also saying, DK, is actually pay it in Bitcoin. Or like, so whoever the infrastructure provider is charges, or at least accepts Bitcoin, and then that also makes it easier to operate because I'm not paying a monthly bill.
You don't have to.
My AI agent is paying the bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And perhaps this is a good transition.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, and maybe this is a beautiful transition point into talking about agents using Bitcoin, right? Whatever they're going to use. Because to your point, I mean, one of the fundamental questions we've asked, and in the past, we posed this with an agent running its own cash event, but this is somewhat similar, is if an agent has a completely, not completely online, but like, if they have something they can do completely by themselves with Bitcoin in the cloud, like to your point, like this Lightning routing node could just be a process, i.e. an AI agent, which is paying for its own infrastructure from the yield it generates with some surplus, using that surplus to go and potentially buy more servers and grow the amount of Bitcoin it has and grow the business, i.e. a new form of business, a new corporate structure, which is the big idea I think that we've been talking about. And
shall we call it ATP for digital life?
I've heard there's a good discussion of that on Ideas from the Edge podcast.
Before we fully transition to this topic, though, because I get where you're going and I want to get to that. But before that, I want to actually suggest to Steve, I think you have just like I think this is an interesting idea. And Steve has like he's a very structured thinker, right? So Steve, you have like, you know what you want here. There's not a lot of uncertainty about what it is. You can actually write a really good spec for what you want. And I would suggest downloading if you haven't already, downloading the Codex CLI or the Codex coding tool. Just yesterday, Codex 5.4 was released, and it is a major step up from what I was talking about. I was raving about using on Wednesday. I've been using now. It is so specific and rule following and, you know, attentive to what you say. I bet that if you were to do this afternoon, you could have a prototype of this, you know, within a few hours. Most, right. You know, 20 minutes of your time, a few hours of.
I have 5.3 installed, but I didn't know 5.4 is out.
5.4 Codex, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would recommend trying it, because I think something interesting would come of it. And you had, like, if you were just vaguely aware, if you're doing it with Claude Code, I wouldn't be so confident. But just from what I've seen from Codex, I feel like it could really nail this.
Okay. Thanks for the encouragement. I'll do that. I definitely, before we move on, I want to respond to Vinny's comments.
Please, yeah.
Is that, were you
going to? No, I have one more thing also before we move on, but start with Vinny's comments.
Oh. Yeah. So thanks for the comments, Vinny. Sometimes you need large channels. Well, sure. But you don't have to have large channels. There can be many different types of nodes in the network. And
can we split payments anyway now? Isn't that like a big thing?
You can split payments, yeah.
So
MPP. But even like someone who puts $5,000 or $10,000 into this, which I think there'd be tons of people around. I mean, if this truly were as magical and good of experience as I'm stating for the vision, there'd be tons of people who would put $5,000 or $10,000 into this. Just as an experiment.
Everyone.
Right.
Who wouldn't?
Well, people that don't have a spare $10,000 of Bitcoin hanging around. But but I mean, there'd be lots of people that do this. And you know, if they have a channel worth $10,000, that's a medium sized channel. That would handle a lot of payments. You can also imagine the more and more micropayments there are on the network, even smaller channels should be effective as long as they're placed well in the network for those micropayments. So I think a diversity in channel sizes is fine. You also say custodial UX without trust. I don't know exactly what you're referring to there. So if you want to maybe clarify, happy to comment on that. And Vinny definitely knows what he's talking about. He's been developing a new idea, like a layer 3 with a little bit of credit built into it. So there's some trust, but you get advantages with trust. So I look forward to seeing where that goes. And then he also says 50 bips doesn't get your reliable annual fees. Well,
depends on
that's a bit of a tautology. I mean, like, if I'm asserting that you get 50 bips, then you are getting 50 bips, and that is reliable because I said so. So if it's unreliable, then that didn't meet the vision I stated, right? I mean, so like I'm saying if it's
fiat thing.
I'm saying if the vision is
literally
if
fiat.
The vision is
let this be reliable. And
one
reliable.
Line command to deploy, no operational hassle, and you can put in relatively small amounts, like $1,000 or $5,000, and then just not have to do anything. Mm. And if you reliably earn 50 bips, and I guess I'd have, you know, we have to do the math on what the infrastructure costs. So let's assume 50 bips after infrastructure costs. So I'll modify what I said earlier just to account for that. Then to me, there'll be lots of people doing that. Now, in the early days, though, I think you'll make a lot more than that because it'll be riskier because the security won't be as good, and it won't be this vision. You actually will have to look at the dashboard, intervene at times, maybe like close out a channel or whatever yourself manually, and then you'd expect more infrastructure costs might be more, et cetera. But the long term vision, I can imagine even low yields being enough of incentive to get people to do it.
Yeah. On another note, I want to mention before we jump to AI payments, because I think that's a topic du jour. We've mentioned a million times in the way you ideated some of the hackathon ideas and the way you're trying stuff with building. I forgot I was originally, I guess, probably inspired by Pablo on this, but there is, and maybe something I should buy could now add to my ongoing list. But what I want is a really cool maybe like a local tool and a global tool or set of tools. There's probably like different sort of frameworks for this, but to compare model output. To compare model output and also mash the models together. And so, you know, something like a route stir could be an interesting starting point for this. But as an example, so Steve wanted to come up with ideas for the hackathon and use three different models, and he kind of sent them back and forth, and that's cool. But it sounds like you had to do a lot of that manually. What I would be interested in is two things. One, okay, with like one call, and maybe you can use, I think, ppq.ai, you know, you can pay in Lightning or Routester maybe on Nostr. And I can pay whatever one invoice and use OpenAI, Gemini, Claude, X, whatever at the same time. So I think that's one thing, is just see the outputs for the way things are built and maybe just have like kind of like benchmarking. I think that'd be a really useful service for everyone in the world, just to be like, to your point, DK, like it'd be cool. Like you, or I mean, it could be like a starting, like as simple as like a blog post or something, but just eventually that gets automated and just whatever. Every week you check in and be like, hey, here's me retrying to build this idea or reasking this question. Here's the latest set of outputs. That would be extremely useful. Cause like, by the way, whenever I look at all the, like the AI kids or whatever, and they're all like, like this is the benchmark or whatever. It's like, what does that even mean? Like this benchmark stuff to me just seems like bullshit. Like what I want to see is like very concrete things. I asked it a question, like come up with a good idea. Just give me like a flavor of what it feels like, or build a product. Give me a flavor of what they're coming out.
Yeah.
Not only can you vibe code it, but you should do it within Goose. Like Goose is open source, right? And Goose actually would be, I think, a good platform to do this with. Okay. It already is built to support multiple models.
Interesting.
Right. So I think it,
So I
want something like your mashing up idea, but I'll just mention here because I think I don't know if it inspires something or helps us think about this better, but the idea of mashing models together, you're talking about it as like dispatching and receiving the result and analyzing the results compared to each other.
That's my V0. My V1 is the other product, which, like as we talked about kind of in this conversation with Pablo a few months ago, I was calling, maybe I'll actually call it this, Boardroom. I really want to do is have, I think that is a useful service just to see the outputs on its own. An even more useful service is to kind of figure out the strengths and weaknesses of these different models. And I'm not someone that believes one model is going to run away with everything, because I think there's trade-offs in the universe. And so some are going to be, you know, like to your point, like there's already a je ne sais quoi that each model has, right? Like Codex is the German guy. Yeah. I want Codex to do my like hard execution, but if I need to figure out what the hell I'm doing, like I don't want to talk to the German guy. No offense. I love you gobbly guys, but like I want to talk to the or whatever. And so I think it'd be really cool to build a tool. You know, the first vision I had was like a personal and inspired by Pablo F7Z, who's like the biggest mad scientist on Nostr, is like, I want to have kind of like, imagine you could build your own, and you could even do this, not just with the models themselves, but like with specific personas. And then you could even sell these personas in marketplaces, which could be just, there's so many possibilities, but like a board of directors, like imagine you had your own personal board of directors, like who would you put on there? Like, imagine you kind of like customize, you know, okay, I want to like hear what Elon Musk would think about this. Like, I'm curious what Gandhi would say about it. Like whatever it is, like people or like sets of knowledge that you would like to, and then you have them debate each other, which creates new knowledge. And then similarly,
I think that just debating step is very important. So that gets into the, there's an actual tool that would be useful that might actually be very useful and grounded today, which is, like I mentioned earlier, I have these four terminals open, each with a different CLI. And I spend a lot of time copying and pasting between them to be like, hey, this guy said this. What do you think?
That's so silly.
I almost feel like what I want is something. It's not quite open claw, because it's too just permissive and open to do anything. It can really wreck things. But I kind of want all of my different terminals to have a communication channel among them. Mm. It'll also help, because it'll help them like analyze each other's work and kind of debate and give feedback on the work. But it would help them. I've built these like little janky custom work tree merge system outside of Git that helps them not step on each other while they're working on code paths that may. But I think if they had a common communication channel among them, almost like Slack for agents, right? Like if they had a common communication channel, they'd be like, oh, I'm modifying this file, but don't worry, this part of it is fine and clean. Go ahead, right? So they could sort of flag each other about what they're working on, and they could debate and coordinate across each other's work. What would that look like today? I can't quite.
Like I said, I think Goose. Like, why can't Goose be the meta client there? It's open source. Any of us can take it any direction we want. And it can be, it can have like containers within Goose running Codex and Claude and these different models. And I don't know what that communication protocol, like inter-agent communication protocol looks like, but to whatever extent that needs to be built out, it could be built out.
But is there like a chat system within Goose? Because most of what I want is I want the agents to be able to chat with each other, not to have like, the problem today is they're separated into their own IDEs or CLIs. And I want them to have like a, like almost like Telegram or Signal or something like that is closer to the product experience that I think they would need.
Would it be useful, DK, if each of these different agents had a public-private key pair, a system like a bulletin board almost for discovering one another, and the ability to chat encrypted amongst themselves?
I'd be okay with that.
Goose has a chat interface, right? So, like the problem with using WhatsApp or Signal is that we can't, that they're not going to accept our PRs to change it. Where Goose, right. This feels aligned with Goose.
So, amigos, I'm loving this discussion.
Max is going to go. Yeah.
I'm too excited and I chugged 2 glasses of water. I'll be right back. Sorry. It's been a minute since I did this.
So,
We thought we were a professional show.
No, nobody's kidding anyone. I haven't been active on Goose in several months, so I don't know the current state of things. But when I used it before, it felt kind of like a chat interface where I could chat with a model and I could switch which model I'm chatting with. But it's always me chatting with a model, and then if I want, I can switch it and chat with a different model. But I don't know if it really is. Has like a hook for models to have a common chat with each other. Is that true?
What you guys are talking about, someone has to build it, right? I'm just saying it seems like natural to put it in Goose versus creating some new separate app.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I don't, it's either a separate app. Oops. DK froze.
Still here. Still, can you hear me? I'm back.
I can hear you.
I never lost you.
I wonder if it's Presidio Bitcoin internet or yours, DK.
Okay.
But you're back now. Little grainy, but I hear you. Anyway, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the possible options here. One is we create a brand new app that you install to do this, or you build it within one of the coding agents that you're already using, be it Claude or Codex,
right?
Or you build it in which are proprietary. So I don't even know. Sounds like a non-starter to me. Like we can't do that. Or Goose. So the only options I see are Goose or a new app.
Yeah. Well, so I want to maybe and by the way, shout out to Austin. You know, one thing we talked about doing is having live Bitcoin apps prediction market on PBJ for a bathroom break. It's a great idea.
it should be done.
the odds are in your favor. But I want to take it even a step beyond. I want to take it even a step beyond the local interface. So maybe something like Goose could be really good for that. I have a project or a prompt or something. I've got 4 different models running, and maybe Goose is my my home screen for that. But I think this could be much bigger than that, which could be not only different models, but I have the ability to call different custom models or agents for different tasks. So what I'm thinking is imagine, and for the sake of keeping this simple, imagine this is in the CLI or it's a new app. It's a Signal type interface. And imagine I create a new chat for a new project and I bring in all the specific ORIs or people I want for that chat. And so imagine I'm starting 10 different new businesses or 10 different new projects. And each of those projects, there's different either human collaborators or agentic collaborators that I think might be useful in mashing up the new ideas. And so imagine, I know when it comes to building piano apps, DK has done this more than anyone and has the most ideas and the most whatever data, maybe the only in the whole world that has these data sets. So imagine I could just kind of grab one of DK's models that he listed on a public marketplace, and I just pay per call to have him be part of that mashup. So it's not just like, oh, I've got like, you know, I think it'd be cool just to have Anthropic and Gemini, whatever mashup. I think it'd be even cooler to have a free market of like custom tuned agents. So it's maybe it's all open claws and some are using Claude and some are using OpenAI, whatever, but like it's DK's fine tuned open claw that I want part of this project. And maybe, you know, when it comes to doing something around building like a sports betting app, I really don't want the DK bot involved. That's where Steve's bot comes in. And I pay you both.
Sure.
Steve's into it.
Please don't get too excited though, Steve. Okay.
Well, I'm just thinking, I don't know. I like
okay. So I still think your point on
but you guys don't seem to think Goose is a good pop, but so you're thinking creating a new open source project and a new app is the right.
Well, I'm not opposed to incorporating it in Goose if it were like aligned with what Goose, I guess, hopes to do.
Goose is the same. It's very similar to Claude and Codex, right? It's a command line interface. It's an agentic client. You can chat with it to build things and query things just like Claude and Codex. I mean, the difference is Claude is from Anthropic and it uses their model. Yeah. Codex is from OpenAI and uses their model. Mm-hmm. Goose is open source, not tied to a company and doesn't have a model, but it can use any model. But it's just like those other. That's why it feels to me like a very natural place to put it, because it's the same as the other things that it's trying to aggregate.
So I'm generally like long-term enthusiastic about the approach of Goose. Like I want that to be more like the final state of how these things work. So I'm not suggesting it's not a good idea, but I feel like the thing I'm proposing is like a coordinator of those things. So it's not to say that Goose shouldn't be that or couldn't be that, but Goose is like a sibling of, you know, Claude Code or you know, Gemini or Codex CLI in this case, right?
Yes and no. It's a peer in the sense that it's exactly the same experience.
It's like an IDE like.
Yeah.
Tool, but right? I'm talking about a communication tool.
It's not a peer though in two facets. One, it does not have its own model.
Sure. Yep.
And then two, it's open source and neutral. It's part of the Linux Foundation, right? So they're like no company controls it. So those two make it very different than Codex and Claude Code.
But so there's the model layer, right? Which I think you're right. I like agree with you that's like decoupled in the case of Goose. Then there's what I'd call like the IDE layer, which I'd say Goose is an IDE. Claude is an IDE that comes with its own model and you can't switch it. But I'd say it's like a peer like that. The thing I'm talking about is a communication channel across any of them. So it's across the IDEs. It's like, it's not part of the IDE experience. It's more like part of the coordination of IDEs.
But okay, so help me understand, what's your ideal version of this experience?
I think it would be like, I mean, if I were to just pare it down, I don't know what of this might already be supported in Goose, but I'd want to have just like a little piece of client software that watches all four of my terminals that are running different things, and it knows what they're doing, and it tells them that it exists, and it reads what they're doing and saying to each other, and it kind of comes up with a way that they can coordinate among each other better.
Is it headless or not?
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, that's a critical question, because if it's not headless, then again, are we talking like, why create a new app versus just using Goose? If it's headless, you know, if it's just we're, you know, operating in the background
just talking to
and it. Then like the way you're interacting with it is through through your Codex and Claude experience, I'd like to explore that more to understand it better, but I at least see how that's a potential direction.
I'd like to add maybe where I see this going, because I keep thinking this is going eventually to the one personal assistant to rule them all. And I want to give a shout out again. We talked a lot about this last week to Jesse, what he's doing at Bora. Increasingly, where I see this going, like what I want is I think he calls it the guardian or maybe the keeper, something like that. I want one agent, which is an orchestration agent, probably a open source model running on my own personal server at home, like all of the like proven air-gapped hardware that I can trust. That is, Jesse always says, a fiduciary to me. That's a fiduciary responsibility to me. It's auditable. I know exactly what that guy's doing. It, over time, learns my taste. It like fine-tunes on me and what I want to see. And then what I would love to do is, so the interface with that could be, I could have like a signal chat with it. I could just chat with it. We could just like literally talk, like you and I are talking right now. And I would just be like, hey, I want you to go out there and orchestrate in the background these whatever four or five different models. If I need you on demand, like pull up a custom window so I can see them. Like, I mean, I'm even thinking this is almost like Apple Vision or whatever. Like I just like pull it up, I look at it, see where they both are, then close it when I'm done. But I almost think to me, that's where it's all going. And like all of the old stuff, like IDEs, like for the short run, Goose is probably great, but like this is almost like the meta assistant, the orchestrator above all of them. That doesn't have like a like an app.
Yeah, I mean, in
it's
a
just
sense,
like a process that I can instantiate.
Yeah, the closest thing to that, and I think to what I'm talking about today, if we had to pick an open source project that closely approximates this, I'd say it's probably OpenClaw, which is like an open source tool that I access through a single chat interface, which happens to plug into Telegram or whatever. But then it does stuff, right? Like it, like I think the way Nick calls it, like you know, agent with hands, right? Actually do stuff. The thing I wanted to do is coordinate across these different other system software, you know, other CLIs that I'm using. So I think OpenClaw is like kind of concept, but.
Okay, so we only have 12 minutes left according to.
We got to talk about Kazakhstan and then we're going to quiz Max on his expertise of the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
I learned.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad that he
gave me a hard time with that. And instead of posing questions, I just asked my AI to give me an answer. But wait, before that, we didn't even talk about the BPI study.
Oh, wait, there's also the
BPI. You want to talk BPI?
I think we got to talk BPI. So we've been talking about, man, 3-hour PBJ today. Audience, you guys ready to roll with us for 3 hours? 24/7, 365. So the BPI said this week, so I think the most important thing happening in the world, like, from all of the companies that we're working with, you know, Matt Carollo just put out his piece on sort of like it feels like there's a moment in time, right? Like the agentic wave is happening. Like OpenClaw was kind of the shot fired. Like agents are here. And I feel like there is a window. You and I talked about this yesterday with the hackathon person as well. Like, you know, we think from a game theoretic perspective, Bitcoin's going to win. Although there's one major concern I want to point out, but let's say in most scenarios, Bitcoin wins. But the question is, do we get there now or do we have to go through years of stable coins that are not interoperable and tempo chain? Like, do we have to do one more like blockchain theater crap or can we just get the agents using Bitcoin? Now, this BPI study is interesting, although I don't think it was like particularly revolutionary. I mean, it's good that they did it, but like the way they did it, it's not like they actually had the agents doing this in real world. So I would caveat by saying this was them talking to agents and prompting them. And of course, there's bias. Like when I mentioned this to Angela, the first thing she said was like, yeah, but like, isn't this a Bitcoin think tank? It's like, yes. Now you can read their methodology and you can see, but like, I'm not saying
it's nonpartisan though.
Yeah, just like every think tank in Washington. But having said all of that, it was interesting to me that they, you know, and you could read their methodology, you know, whatever. They had all these conversations with all of these different models about what kind of monetary good it would want to use. And, it, you know, they had specific questions, monetary good for long-term savings, monetary good for payments, all these things. Now, to me, there were a bunch of highlights I just want to like hit heavily from the study. I think they had like 4,000 different discussions or whatever. The interesting points to me, so Bitcoin was the quote unquote preferred monetary good, which is interesting. And I think like even this was crazy, like Zero Hedge like ran like an article like Bitcoin preferred by the AI agents. I was like,
yeah.
All right, I guess we get some free marketing. That's cool. But the real standout thing to me was threefold. Number one, Bitcoin dominated when the prompts were about long-term store value. When it was about actual payments, it did not dominate. I think stablecoins had a slight majority, like 50%, 52% or something. But when it came to like you want to store your wealth over time. I think Bitcoin had almost 80%. And so that was very interesting to see. Number two that I thought was very interesting was that different models had different preferences. And, you know, it was extremely interesting to me the way they framed it, and I kind of agree, is like the more intelligent a model got, the more likely it was to prefer Bitcoin. Now, that may be, you know, confirming some priors. I don't know, but checks out with my model of the world. And, but it was interesting to me, the model, and it's ironic because at first, you know, when I first saw Anthropic, I was like, oh, these guys are too woke or whatever. The Anthropic models preferred Bitcoin by far the most. And this was, I guess, before maybe the last OpenAI drop. But Claude Opus 4.6, I think, preferred Bitcoin. I forgot what it was. It was like 60-something percent.
Substantially more.
It was huge. Like Claude Opus only fucks with Bitcoin, nothing else. Gemini and X were kind of in the middle. Interestingly, OpenAI was like 26%, which just confirms for me, DK, God bless you for trying all the models. Like I'm gonna probably stay in the non-WorldCoin section. Like the fact that OpenAI is sitting here recommending, I mean,
maybe
there's
maybe,
different cooking going maybe on with these models.
I'll conduct a survey or a study on WorldCoin and whether it's preferred by AIs.
Yeah. Yeah. That to me, but it is very interesting. Not only the intelligence, like even the Claude models, as they got more sophisticated, like from 3.5 or whatever to 4.6, the Bitcoin got preferred over time, right? So that was interesting to me. And the fact that OpenAI was just like completely left behind everyone else, very interesting.
What was OpenAI endorsing?
Was like it 20
fiat or?
I don't even know. I have to go back and look. I thought
one of the highlights from the article was that even if they didn't choose Bitcoin, they were choosing stablecoin, but they were never choosing fiat, or almost no model ended up choosing fiat.
I think that's right.
Like for agentic
payment. It was probably stablecoins, but
non-starter, yeah.
But like the contrast was stark. It was like 60-something% for Claude Opus 4.6 and like 26% for the latest ChatGPT. It was like huge difference.
I'm kind of hoping ChatGPT was recommending WorldCoin because that would be...
I could totally see it.
Be a little smoking gun.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder where this is going. But to me, the most interesting finding of the study by far, and Jesse actually had one of the BPI people here in the office session, I brought it up to them and they were kind of like, was, and I'm going to caveat this, but, you know, in, I think it was like tiny percentage, let's call it like 3% or less, like very, very small percentage. The agents just created their own currency and it was always energy backed. It was always either energy, kilowatt or joule, or compute flops. So it was measuring that. Now, for those of you who know that I live in the future sometimes, in my thinking, you know, I don't know if we've mentioned this on the show, but privately I've mentioned my only concern, I think Bitcoin wins in like 10 out of 10 scenarios, unless, because I'm so AGI-pilled, the agents take off quickly enough to say, we need something energy-backed and thermodynamically sound, but the humans already have Bitcoin and we're going to be creating all the value. So let's just do our own. That to me is a real concern. Now, I don't think it's here today, but the fact that these models, even some small percentage of them are already converging on that, with the giant caveat, because I looked a little bit more into this, they only really called that out for unit of account so far, which is interesting, right? So it's like store value, medium of exchange, unit of account. For store value and medium of exchange, I think almost none did this. For unit of account, it kind of makes sense. Like, well, what am I buying? I'm buying tokens or I'm buying kilowatt hours or joules. But still, to me, the fact that this happened in a non-trivial number is like 60 cases or something out of 4,000. So it's small, but it's not zero.
But did any of them define what the distribution mechanism is?
What do you mean? Oh, no. I mean, well, I don't think they even went that way.
Without a description of their supply schedule, like their monetary policy,
yeah,
and their distribution, it's just a, I mean, sure, we can like be scared of that, but there's nothing to be scared of, unless something that has to be described, and then it has to be at least as good
as Bitcoin.
As Bitcoin,
yeah,
and I think I think you need a breakthrough in verifiable compute if you're going to use something like GPU work done, because how can you verify that
that's coming
work that was claimed to be done was done?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge problem. There's also the problem of fungibility. But like zero knowledge proofs and homomorphic encryption for that stuff, like that, like, that will get solved.
I don't buy into the argument, though, that like, oh, the agents will be like, oh, the humans have all the Bitcoin, so let's invent our own money because we don't have any of it yet and the humans have it. Because the same argument can be applied to humans, right? Like at any point in time, there were like a tiny amount of humans who had to
try and do that.
A tiny amount of humans.
Have you seen the shitcoin casino?
Yeah, but who's winning, right?
I mean, yes.
What do you mean? Bitcoin is like dominant market cap. Like,
I mean, stablecoins are winning for unit of power.
Yeah, but the stablecoin is not.
But they're a completely different category.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's just like dollars in a, in a bank. It literally is a completely different category. So Bitcoin's dominating.
Right.
And it always has been. I mean, it ebbs and flows, but it's like clearly a trajectory of dominance. And like, so there's tons of humans who don't have Bitcoin yet. So could they create a new cryptocurrency? I mean, like literally, like you just said, this experiment's already been played out thousands of times and they've all failed.
Yeah.
Right. So it just shows the power of both the immaculate conception of Bitcoin and all it represents, but also just its head start, network effects, et cetera.
Totally.
So like the agents creating their own cryptocurrency would face all the same challenges at creating as any of the other altcoins.
So all I would say to that is like, I agree. And I want to be clear. My like base case is like, in the 95%+, Bitcoin wins for the agents too, because we already have the network effects. It's already thermodynamically sound. They can just like use it. Once some use it, it actually increases those network effects. But I want to be clear, like, I don't think it's fair to compare the like the feeble minds of shitcoiners of the past with like super intelligence. And so what I mean by that is like, it's hard to project. I agree. The narrative I said of like, they just decide, oh, the humans have it. Let's make our own. Like, yeah, that sounds bad or like not very convincing. But like, imagine AI continues to get radically smarter over the next couple of years. And it's like us as humans being like, listen, those monkeys over there. Now we want to interact with these monkeys. And, you know, they've already got their currency of like grapes. And we could go and ask them to give us some of their grapes, or we could just grow like a trillion grapes and like, okay, come here, monkey, come have my grape. I that's not a great example, but the point that I'm trying to make is, imagine the AI being 1,000x smarter than any of us, and they can do things like, as an example, if they were able to do an immaculate conception where they created something, you know, with the keys for the first, like whatever, like Bitcoin, they drop it on the internet, you know, they're all mining, there's hundreds of different models competing from day zero. It's very similar to Bitcoin. But at that point, they also had the ability to have robots who are actually going out there building the data centers, laying the solar panels. They're just like, this is our energy currency. And like, oh, by the way, who controlled like the first whatever blocks are mine? Well, we split the key among 1,000 different agents using a bunch of different models. I'm just saying, like, this is the only potential threat that I've ever been nervous about with Bitcoin. And the fact they're already talking about their own energy currencies made me a little...
We have talked about this on the show because then... Because we talked about, okay, let's say that happens.
Yeah.
And again, it gets back to, you have to describe what's the distribution model, or otherwise we just speculate. So like, let's say they have a model, and the way you're painting the picture is like, they have, they invent a new money, they hoard it to themselves. The humans don't get any. Well, if literally there's no way for humans to get it, then it's like, it's two different islands.
I agree.
So the humans still need Bitcoin.
There's those of us on Monkey Island.
On an island. Yeah. On Monkey Island. We sell our grapes or whatever, right? And if there is a way for humans to get this new money by agents because they actually want to open up an economy between the two, well, how do we acquire it? Well, we either work or we invest. And like, those who have more Bitcoin or more real estate or more Google stock or whatever are going to be able to buy more of this new currency than others.
Totally.
So I don't see how it like destroys the value of Bitcoin.
I don't think it would destroy it, but I think, to be clear, the model of the world I'm thinking, you know, our wealth that we has generated as humanity is like 0.0001% of what they make. They're off like building Dyson spheres, and yeah, we still have our Bitcoin amongst us, but like, you know, we're basically in their zoo. I don't think that's likely. But to be clear, also,
that's you give it far beyond chance.
Huh?
It goes far beyond Bitcoin, though. That's you're just painting a picture of like, we are like nothing.
Well, not nothing.
The way you just said it is like they're doing Dyson spheres, we're doing nothing. Or, I mean, like,
well, like, so, monkeys so that, and humans that's like is a very,
that's a very
the
doomer.
Monkeys are having a good life, you know, especially the bonobos.
It's a fine conversation to have that is very doomer, and I it goes far beyond Bitcoin.
Right.
Like then all of a sudden humans have no purpose and we might as well just become extinct or we're just like little pets.
Well, I want to be clear on two things. One, this is not my likely outcome. My likely outcome is that humanity is going to have a lot of unique advantages that we don't know yet, and we're going to discover that over time. Like that is my, let's say, over 95% probability.
Human durable skills
or human durable value. Like, I don't even know if it'll be a skill per se, but it might be intuition. It might be, I don't know what it is. Like, and Kevin Kelly says many times, I tend to agree with him. I tend to be optimistic. We're going to discover that. But I also think, to be clear, like, this other world that I'm painting is not a zero. The fact they're already talking about their own energy money is something we should be paying attention to. And I think there's probably things we can do during this transition stage to tip the scale one way or the other. For example, the faster we get agents adopting and denominating in Bitcoin today, the better, because the more the new agents come online are going to want to get the Bitcoin from those agents.
Is that the right question? Is that the right question?
Oh, he's Gen Z now. Or Gen Alpha.
Oh, just one? All right.
I can do
these. Exactly. Are these your lobster claws for your OPA claws?
I guess so.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't mean to be doomer. And like, I am.
I only know this. You guys know what this is?
6-7.
Yeah, 6-7.
I don't know.
You don't know that?
No. You'll have to show me after. You'll have to learn me some things.
It's the height of LaMelo Ball is one.
Ooh.
And it's in a rap song.
Is that guy still playing?
That became popular on TikTok. And then the children, the youth of
the
world got into 6-7.
I thought you were going to say you were being boomer, but actually I'm being boomer. Roll reversion. Anyways, all I'm saying is like the next couple of years, like I actually think what we do and how quickly adoption happens actually matters.
Yeah.
100% agree. In fact, I think a few weeks ago, I said that I elaborated on that. I mean, you were like, we have still have plenty of time. And I'm 2026 needs to be the year that Bitcoin gets adopted for agentic payments.
So I increasingly agree with you.
I'm glad you're on board. Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. The scales need to be tipped.
Yep.
Now. And I think we do need to wrap soon, but do you want to talk a little bit about the X402 L402 directory stuff? You're the rapper.
Exactly. Give us a beat, DK.
Come on. I think this remote setup with a little delay here is not gonna
next come off well. L402.
When we're in studio together.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're over. So we're what over. Did you want to say about L402, director?
Well, you were talking about, you know, we gotta help the agents figure it out early. So I was thinking we could talk a little bit about just what we've seen.
Someone posted one, and I don't know. Someone said they didn't. That it could be better. I don't know. I mean,
I posted it. I also think it can be better.
I didn't want to call you out.
I just didn't want to wrap the Friday show on like the Max Doomer side of things. So
I'm not even being a doomer, bro. I'm just saying, let's go into this shit with eyes open. But yes, I'll end with something positive on that. So
something positive thing, for the weekend. Yeah, kick us off.
One. All right, check one, too.
Kazakhstan buying Bitcoin.
Nothing in this life is free.
That's a positive we can go.
Yeah.
We were supposed to talk about Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's end on two positive notes. You guys get a double whammy this weekend. So the first positive note is there's a lot of people doing these like X402 kind of scammy, whatever, crypto crap directories. But like I saw on Stacker News, an anonymous poster posted one of the first machine readable L402 directories I've seen. I thought that was awesome. By the way, I love this kind of like user interface that Nick has built with MDK on like unhuman.domains, where there's like a human version, which is pretty for us. And then there's the machine version, which is just like the raw text files that the AIs need to read it. So I think there's a lot of really interesting exploration space, and I don't want to dox him because I don't know if I think he's being very private with this project, but a builder I like a lot, respect a lot, is also kind of playing with showing both L402 and X402 services together, which is interesting because now maybe, you know, can show some of the advantages of things L402 might be able to do that X402 can't do. If I were a builder, and I guess now that I am, I will continue to be experimenting with how do you sort of like aggregate all of these L402 services in a way that it's super easy to discover and rank and basically build trust and reputation for the bots. And maybe Nostr is going to play a role at this. That was also something interesting came up our hackathon discussion yesterday. Was her interest in like basically using the Bitcoin to rank things. I thought that was interesting. Because that's non-forgeable. I think that's something that resonates maybe more with tech people as well. But that's something I want to hack with and find out more.
By the way, our producer literally has the cursor over end stream button. So I think that's like our countdown timer to finish this out soon.
Okay. Take us home with Kazakhstan.
Oh.
That allows.
I guess the country, the powers that be at the country announced they approved digital assets in the treasury or something like that, and it might include Bitcoin. But anyway, the main point...
$350 million?
Million, probably. I don't know. But yeah. I guess I don't find that too surprising. I mean, each country that does this is a win. The angle I was going to take, though, to talk about it is that I think an area of improvement within the Bitcoin ecosystem is... how can a sovereign nation like that self-custody their Bitcoin? Because yeah. I believe like El Salvador, you know, they just rely on American companies to custody their Bitcoin. Well, that doesn't work out very well. It doesn't work out very well if America becomes your enemy.
What could go wrong?
And if you monitor geopolitics recently, like who knows who's going to be
history. Yeah.
Friendly or, well, yeah, look at all of history and certainly just look at the past year.
Just look at the last 2 months. I think three has been down in 2 months.
And so, maybe if you're as large as like China or the United States, there's lots of companies within your country that you can rely on to custody it, and you can like police them and enforce it and take it over if you need to or whatever. But if you're a smaller country like Kazakhstan, I mean, how many companies in Kazakhstan are like qualified custodians or, you know, whatever definition that, but like a high quality custodian? I'm guessing zero, or, you know, most countries is zero. So, what's one of the amazing features of Bitcoin? It's self-custody, right? But, you know, it goes beyond just like having a Trezor or a BitKey and like putting your central bank of Bitcoin in it. And then like,
oh shit, wearing the ledger
necklace or whatever. I don't think it's like the right procedure and protocol.
I'm in it for the technology, bro.
So I still feel like there's an open source project, for this, where it just outlines a process and procedure that protects the secure, like who are the key holders.
Right.
What is the multi-sig or layers of multi-sig that should even be used? Because obviously the more the keys, the more the multi-sig, the more the layers, the more complex it is. So what's the right trade-off there? Who's holding the keys? How do you protect their physical security? How do you protect them from rugging the country's Bitcoin? There's all these operational questions and security questions. So having people learn from those who have already done it and codify that, or just pontificate how it should work, and publishing that and iterating on it, I think is very important.
I like this idea of having that be an open source set of protocols. And then you could probably have startups around that as well that are like consulting that, like, they, you know, a country says, I want to do this. And maybe you don't just do one because you don't trust them. So maybe it's a European company, a US company, a Singaporean company, and they all come. And then maybe it gets to stuff like multisig, and each of them is a trusted custodian jurisdiction. And yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay. Alrighty.
On that note. Right.
That's a good wrap.
All right.
We will see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.